This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
So this is the MGO Blog Roundtable. It's named for MGO Blog, features MGO Blog, and today it's exclusively manned by the man that started it all at MGO Blog.
Your table's not very round, Sam.
Yeah, it's not, is it?
Do I get to accuse Craig of various
I have no idea.
Problems?
What? Because we didn't say last week, no roundtable, right?
No, I was coming in, though. You didn't say it, and then you're like, well, we on the other side, and you didn't say it. I was like, oh, did I miss a memo?
Because normally, the reason why I didn't is normally by the time, I mean, Craig is in the in the last segment, he's here.
He's here for Hutch.
Right, he's here for, well, is he?
He's been here for Hutch, I bet you, for the last 5 weeks or something.
Yeah, he's
like that.
Certainly here for the last segment of the 8 o'clock hour when he wasn't. It's like, maybe I better not say MGO Blog Roundtable in case the guys don't show up.
Because I do occasionally miss memos, and then I have to, like when you guys are on site somewhere, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh God, now I have to look up where that is. Like you were at, was it UTech?
We were at UTech.
Yeah, and I turned on the radio and I was like, oh, where is that? Like hurriedly Google it and I was like, all right, I can get there.
Yeah, you made it. So, pressing question, and we posed this to Steve Clark yesterday. So Michigan, they're on this, so they went on safari.
Yeah.
Yesterday, right? And so they're out getting too close to lions, way too close to lions. That was one thing. That was one observation. The other observation was, you know, Dudek, they were tracking rhinos. Did you see them? They were tracking rhinos.
I did not see this.
And so the guide, as they were tracking rhinos, picked up a pile of rhino dung. And said, this is rhino dung. And so I was struggling to figure out what was the value of picking up the rhino dung? What can you discern?
Yeah.
From picking up,
you could point at it.
Yeah, you could point.
It's a process that we would know.
Iron, isn't that what it is? You could point at it and say that's rhino dung, right? You could see how much.
Also, it seems pretty obvious.
The smell,
like
right?
You know, you like I don't need to be told that this giant pile of excrement. I can tell. I've seen it. Well, not that particular, but
right.
I've seen piles of poop before. I know what they're like. Was there something special about the rhino dung?
No, it just random rhino dung that he picked up as part of their rhino tracking.
Well, maybe I don't. Oh. Maybe it smells different. I don't know. Maybe it smells good. That could be. It could be hot.
No idea, but it definitely looks like, you know, they're having an absolute blast over there, and it to me. This is a twofold thing. Number one, the cultural enrichment of the guys on this team, amazing. But as we have this debate, Brian, and for you and I, it's not a debate. I think we are you know, like-minded with what we think should happen in intercollegiate athletics as far as compensation for greater compensation for players. But this is a way that Michigan within the current rule structure is giving, you know, increased compensation to their football team.
Yeah, and I'm sure that many of the players would rather just have them struck a check.
I agree.
You know, given the fact that we are in the structure we're in, this is a good thing that Michigan is doing. I've never been to South Africa. Have you been to South Africa?
I've never been, no.
So, like, this is a culture experience that, like, a lot of, you know, middle class, upper middle class people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And for Michigan football to be able to do is great.
I'm curious, how do you think this is going to go? Because other teams, man, there are other programs that could do this.
Yeah.
There's no doubt that they would have donors that would throw this out. Now, you know, of course, why would they ever want to support the cultural enrichment of their team, of their program? But, you know, selfishly for them, they could say, hey, man, this could help with recruiting. If they start showing tangible returns, recruiting rise based on this, I think maybe you'll see other teams do it.
Possibly. I mean, I think one of the things is that, you know, the boosters who are making this happen for Michigan and donating to very generously to make it something that the university can do, those guys are already occupied with other activities at Clemson or in Alabama. So, maybe their money is already being spent.
True. But on bump. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. You're right on that. I think that as we see more numbers, though, because, man, I was looking this earlier this week, the Texas Tech AD is making $1.5 million a year, dude.
At Texas Tech, yeah. And, I mean, the thing is, like, you kind of see the media, like, really buying into it this year. I think it's because it is in South Africa, which is, like, if you go to Paris, it's like, oh, you went on vacation. Right? But you go to Mandela's jail cell, that's a different thing entirely. And so you see Bruce Feldman tweeting about it. You see Ray Ratto tweeting about it. It kind of feels like, you know, this is the year where it's really like, hey, yeah, this
is actually. They went to Normandy, though. That's not like a vacation spot.
I know. But, you know, the whole, like, let's go to France is, it has a different vibe, mm-hmm. I think, than this particular trip. And so,
and without, you know, media coverage, this is, you know, following the Michigan Twitter sphere, or the official Michigan Twitter, and the players, they're tweeting back, but there's no real, you know, outside media coverage.
Well, they had like Marty, I forget his last name, Marty Smith or something from ESPN. Like when they went to, I think it was Rome.
Both. He was in Rome and Paris.
Yeah, and so they had this embedded guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I think if you have money to spend and you want to follow the rules, this is one of the best ways to do it.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, the guys are taking a ton from it. It looks like we'll see, we'll see how it benefits them on the recruiting trail moving forward. We had a nice piece that Bryce Marriage did, you know, catching up with a lot of prospects and their parents are responding to it. Now, you know, as we turn our attention to next season, we've broken down a lot of things. I know you went back over the roster, and now projecting ahead and, you know, finding the strengths and the weaknesses of the team. What did your kind of second look at the roster reveal to you, both positive and negative?
Well, I mean, I'm writing up the season preview for Hill of Victors right now. So it's like, you got to go in and you got to be like, what are we looking at? And I think one of the things we maybe didn't appreciate as much as we could have is Nico Collins. So Pro Football Focus didn't have him for a drop last year. I did, because there was a goal line slant that I thought he should have tried to catch that he didn't. But that was the one. And then they just posted a stat where his contested catch rate was something like 82%, which is 20 points higher than anyone else in the Big Ten. And just because of the nature of the offense last year, how they have to try to protect Patterson from too many like deep drops and trying to keep him upright, they didn't really take advantage of the fact that they have this guy who's a Funchess like downfield threat. Mm-hmm. And I think getting more attempts, getting more targets for both Collins and Peoples-Jones is going to be a big thing that is on Gattis's plate this year.
You know, one of the things that I'm writing up as part of the national piece, speak of the devil, for the national piece is, you know, biggest question mark on the team. And I sided with the secondary, just collectively. You know, I probably point to safety specifically, but the secondary, man, I feel like coming into this season, even, you know, I expect LeVert Hill to be really good. Surgery will do him. It sounds like it's doing him well. I know he was working out at Belleville, you know, a few weeks before they went to South Africa and was looking really good over there, looking like his healthy self. I think he'll be good. I think Ambry's ready to step up a boy, Brian. I mean, Michigan had the luxury of a proven third corner. You know, safeties may have been limited physically, but they were veterans. I don't know, man. As I look at where the biggest drop off is going to be, you know, you had more losses in the front seven.
Yeah.
You know, bigger time players in the front seven, but man, you look on the back end, I feel like that's where they're going to feel it the most.
You know, I feel like, you know, you can probably plug Dax Hill in pretty quickly. And that's,
I think you have to.
Well, yeah, but I also think that even if you didn't have to, that if he was coming in, that, mm-hmm. like, that's not a terrible situation, because this guy is basically a perfect safety prospect. And I remember some months ago when you were talking about Michigan's chances of getting him versus him going to Alabama, this is before he flipped, and you're like, you know, usually Michigan would have a playing time argument to make about Dax Hill.
Right.
But, yeah. You know, Saban legitimate, like you were talking to your guys at the Alabama site, Saban legitimately thought this was one of the best safety prospects he'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. And that he would walk into Alabama's starting lineup. So, you know, I'm actually pretty copacetic about safety as long as everyone stays healthy. if people don't stay healthy, that's bad. But the third corner, like, I feel like you can find a boundary corner. Like, you can bring a guy in the nickel package and you can tell him that, you know, you're soloed up against the 3x1 receiver, the guy on the backside, and just shove him into the sideline and make him run fades. And I think a lot of guys can do that. And you're going to have to find someone who doesn't get beat on releases, but I think you can find someone there. My biggest concern is definitely defensive tackle, because, mm-hmm. you know, last year we saw Michigan have two guys who made no impact in the pass game, and that eventually got Michigan in trouble late in the season when they couldn't maintain their pass rush, because teams figured out that you could just double both defensive ends, because Michigan had to use their inside linebackers as pass defenders because of some limitations at safety. And then there were only two guys who could get to the quarterback unless they were in their pass rush package. So that, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is can you get a two-way player? And so for me, Mike Dwumfor is the most important player on this team, because he showed the ability to get to the quarterback from the defensive tackle spot. And if he can just, you know, be a good, maybe even just an okay run defender, then I think Michigan's ceiling really goes up on defense.
Craig Ross, how are you, my man?
I'm doing good. I didn't know we were on, and I told Ed Fang we weren't. So sorry, Ed. I was sitting in my underwear in my living room and said, Brian's on. Oh, my goodness.
You're wearing a shirt that says Michigan Basketball Media Day.
Yeah,
10/14/08.
Did you have that slobber on it?
Yeah,
too.
Did you have that specially made? For,
no. That
they
was
gave them away that year.
They gave them away that year.
That's
and
so
they,
weird.
And there's like a little
2 years.
There we was played, didn't
we played. Yeah, and for 2 years they put us through drills.
I remember that.
There the was drill like, day was humiliating.
There was always pictures of like sports writers trying to do athlete stuff, and I was like, why take pictures of this?
Yeah, it was humiliating, humblifying, in the words of Don King. I sort of agree I agree in part with Brian's take, and I disagree in part with Brian's take. I mean, the problem is.
Thanks for coming in, Craig.
Well, the real reason why I came in is I didn't want you to say anything bad about Trotsky, and someone has to defend the dude. The problem with the defense is you take four guys out of this defense who are actually really, really good and are probably going to be really good NFL guys. I mean, if I had to make a prediction, I would guess Winovich, Gary, Bush, and David Long are all going to be good players in the NFL. And you can't take four guys, at least at Michigan, four guys who are really good players out and expect to be as good as we were last year. That, you know, now what happened at the end of last year, I still don't know. And I haven't heard great explanations for exactly what happened. Maybe you've made them and I've just closed my ears.
We're just talking about the third corner, and the thing that happened in the Ohio State game more so than anything else is that Michigan's third corner got exposed by guys who run 4.3s.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you can go into that game thinking that, you know, you have to change your defense. You have the number one defense in the country.
Right, exactly.
But Ohio State clearly thought that Michigan's third corner was a weakness, and that turned out to be very, very true. And now we're in a situation where it's like, well.
And now we're in a situation where I think you have to wonder about the third corner against more teams than just Ohio State. You know, it was, yeah, that was an issue against Ohio State. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an issue against most of the rest of the schedule.
Although you saw some cracks in the Indiana game.
Yeah,
and there were some precursors of that in Indiana, I think the Florida game was more of a one-off, because I mean that was a low-scoring game until late in the half when you had two guys injured on the same play who were the backups for guys who weren't playing in the first place, and then
I think Michigan's motivation was
motivationally
zero.
Florida was motivated. They had never beaten Michigan. They had been cranked by Harbaugh last time they played him. So
and Michigan's coming off the Ohio State game. They've got what, four guys who are sitting out,
right?
Yeah.
Folks, we need to get to a break. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. The MGO Blog Roundtable. We have Brian Cook,
Hello.
Craig Ross is in studio. Ed Fang is not here because of Craig Ross.
Yeah, disinformation by me. Sorry, Ed, again.
So Ed's going to blame me for this again.
He'll blame you. No, yeah. He should blame me because he called me and I said, oh, I'll call Brian.
You said that something he said was stupid and he was like, Brian!
That is true.
That's true.
Yeah, that muscle did. Memory. Muscle memory. He just assumed it was Brian ragging on him.
And I was just like, I agree with Craig, but I didn't say that.
Yeah, that's true. And he was right.
You know, so. I just saw Ed Sunday. His his kids were in, we were doing the Burns Park fun run.
Yeah.
And so our kids were in it. Quincy was in it as well. And then Ed was over there having a good time. If I had known that he had the wrong information about the... About the round table. I should have said see you on the round table. That would have corrected.
Before we go off the air, we should talk about whether we're showing up next week, I guess. So, although.
Possibly that could be an off air conversation. I thought we would go until the basketball roster is set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so here's the thing. And by the way, I'm going to have an update later on today on Javon Cumberland. Okay. I was able to finally get someone on the line about him yesterday. But speaking of college basketball, the corruption trial. You know, a couple of more convictions, a couple of additional convictions for Christian Dawkins and Merle Code. They were found guilty of trying to bribe coaches. They were contending. Oh, they weren't bribing coaches. They were scamming them. And you got to know the scam. You got to know, man, this money is.
That also seems illegal.
Seems like a crime.
Right.
But you could ask Joe Simon, but I think it's probably a crime.
I mean, they got him on, I think, three of about 12 charges.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so the bone of contention is they're saying he was trying to pay coaches. Mm-hmm. He was trying to bribe them directly. He said, no, this undercover FBI agent was coming in with this money saying, hey, I want to pay coaches. And I was telling him, no, we shouldn't pay coaches. This is ridiculous. We should pay kids and their families. He openly admitted doing that, saying, hey, this is how you get players. Players have relationships with agents coming in the door. So kind of laying bare exactly what goes on, not just on the college basketball scene, Craig Ross.
Yeah.
But also on the college football scene. We had a very revelatory conversation with Ron English that I guess you just.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the details of this better than I do, but I just for some reason missed it and thought, well, maybe other people have too, where Michigan had a commit from a defensive back. Jai Eugene. And he was a top 100 guy.
He was a five star.
And,
Army All American.
Okay. A very, very fine high school player. And we thought he was coming to Michigan. And then I think English, who was, I think, the primary recruiter, talked to him the day before a letter of intent.
He committed to we knew he was going to commit to Michigan. He had already silently done so. And then he committed publicly on national television at the Army All-American game. And he's coming
to Michigan.
To Michigan. You know, and that's, you know, this is not long before National Signing Day. And then you get, I think it was a week prior to National Signing Day, he calls up and he's like, I'm going to LSU. And Fred Jackson was his primary, but you had Ron English as the position coach. Mm. And so it got to the point where, you know, Fred was flustered that this guy that they had a commitment from is saying that he's not coming now. So he put Ron on the phone with him and he proceeds to tell Ron, hey, coach, they are going to take care of my baby. My mom's getting a house and, you know, my dad's out of jail.
Right.
You know, all these things are happening. Yeah, I got to
get out of jail. That's some pull.
Said, hey, I got to go to LSU. And at that point, hearing all the things that LSU allegedly. I did for him. He said, yeah, you got to go to LSU.
Well, the interesting thing to me about this story, the most interesting thing, is that Ron English's point of view or express statement to the kid was, go to LSU. You know, it wasn't, oh, wait a minute, this is breaking the rules. It wasn't, oh, I got to report this to the NCAA. Right. It was, go to LSU. And so, it really, a lot of this sort of underscores what Brian's themes have been over the last couple of years.
And I get where you're coming from, because I've asked this question of coaches, not about, you know, a specific instance where they turned a blind eye like this one with Ron, but just more generally, like, why don't, I mean, this persists in part because coaches don't typically tell. Like they, you know, if someone's cheating, they just, hey, they're cheating down there. We aren't going to cheat here. Like, I mean, they, Lloyd knew what was up.
Sure he did.
They got Bo involved, clearly. Yeah. If you read that part of the story, and yet there was no cycling of that information to the NCAA. And I just think the coaching fraternity is so tight that there's this don't snitch proposition.
It's called Omerta and the mob.
There was a story recently that was going around among media people, both the rival site and your site, at least an off the record story about a Big Ten basketball player who stayed an extra year because an NBA player was paying him. And when I mentioned, and I heard that from people at your site, Sam, and then I talked to people at the competing site and they said, oh yeah, everybody knows that story. And so I had asked people who might know, whether the coaches knew about that. And they said, of course the coaches know. Of course the coaches know. But is anyone saying anything about it? No. And I think it's because either people think, who cares? It's really not all that bad. This isn't a crime. Or because they realize at some point it becomes a circular firing squad.
Yeah.
Everyone's just pointing the machine gun at everybody else.
So, you don't want to burn any bridges that might cost you personally down the line.
I'm reminded of who's the recruit that Alabama couldn't take like on signing day, and he ended up gray shirting and still going to Alabama, and he was a top 100 recruit.
Can't remember.
And he's like, I remember this vividly, where like he's on television and he's just weeping because he's not going to go to Alabama, and he's not mad. He's not like, all right, I'm going to sign with your biggest rival. And to me, that's because, you know, he's signed up with Alabama and he signed up for a financial package. And if Alabama can't take him and he can't get that financial package, what does that mean for his family? What does that mean for his mom? And like, you know, that guy's probably poor and needs that money.
Oh, I mean, Laramie Tunsil, you remember one of the excerpts from in that case was him calling up one of the athletic department officials at Ole Miss and saying, hey, my mom's lights are about to be cut off.
Right.
You know, get on the good foot, man. And I saw that. And as much as you turn your nose up at people flouting the rules, that was one where it's like, man, I can't get upset about a kid getting his mom's bills.
Well,
paid.
I mean, we should make a distinction between the kids who are just trying to get paid for goods and services that they provide. It's called a job. And then the adults in the situation who are often acting unethically, not necessarily because they're giving kids the money, but because they're flouting the rules and they have this culture of not speaking. So that's how you get stuff like Zach Smith. And that's, I think Dan Wetzel had a really great column about this trial where they're talking about how, like, what are the adults doing in this situation? Like, Christian Dawkins is not an agent.
Right.
Christian Dawkins is a guy who runs around lying about all his connections, and he's hooked up with this Blazer guy who's, what, how many charges, federal charges, does he catch for embezzling from his clients?
Yeah.
And these guys...
He's a financial advisor.
Right. Right. And like,
suppose.
So these coaches are trying to hook their players up with these guys. Like, you know, if you're trying to hook your players up with a legitimate agent who's like a real person who's like established, that's a completely different thing than hooking your players up with these jokers who are embezzlers.
And right? I can give you examples, you know, of Michigan, whether it's the Tommy Amaker regime or the John Beilein regime, of course, where they have said no. I mean, no to the hey, my player is about to go to the NBA, or your player. So you're John Beilein,
yep.
Or you're an assistant.
Yeah.
Hey, so or you're Tommy Amaker. Hey, you know, I might be able to help you out with this player here that you're recruiting, but just, you know, when your guys are about
steer
to go
them
pro,
back to me.
Yeah. Steer your guys that are going pro. Just tell them to look at me. And that. Is it against NCAA rules? So when a guy is going pro, for a coach to say, hey, you should
encourage him to go,
that's not against the rules, but it is unethical.
And it does provide programs complete cover and plausible deniability.
It does.
You don't need, I'm not saying there aren't any bag men anymore, because there are, but you don't need it really in some sense, right? Because you can do it through the back door.
Right. And they have said no to, I mean, for, like I said, it's not, that's not violating. Everyone said, hey, you know what, as you're looking at agents, look at this guy, you're supposed to, you know, offer advice, but sure. The way their approach is, they, you know, lay out the, you know, the process and tell you to explore your options. You have questions to ask about different guys, I can ask around for mm-hmm. you, but I'm not, they aren't making a practice of, hey, you should talk to Christian Dawkins. Right. I mean, you should look no further than the Tugs Bowen recruitment. I mean, Michigan yeah. was in his top 12. He's an in-state guy. He'd been on campus multiple times, and then all of a sudden, he cuts it down, and Michigan's nowhere to be found. I mean, Michigan State was still in the mix. Michigan's nowhere to be found. And so why? Why? Now, ultimately, they said Michigan State wasn't willing to pay either, but that ought to tell you something, that Michigan from top 12, in it strong, he's visiting, and all of a sudden, they're nowhere to be found? There you go. This is an example, in my opinion, kind of speculating, informed speculation, that, you know, when it came time to the quid pro quo part of it, no, not going to take part in that.
Yeah.
And you know, I think a lot of this gets fixed if you just let them have their name and image rights, like, and allow them to sign with agents and get paid by the, like, legitimate certified NBA agents.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't affect their eligibility. Like, and, you know, the arguments that the NCAA tries to make in court that people are going to stop watching the NCAA because, I mean, they don't stop watching Baylor games because of what happened to Baylor. There is nothing in the world that will get college sports fans to stop watching college sports.
I don't understand how Sean Miller, for instance, still has a job.
I don't know. I mean, like,
how is Sean Miller able to recruit?
The NCAA doesn't care about that, I mean, really.
It feels like we're coming to a breaking point here because, yeah. like, even if you think these rules are ethical, they're obviously unenforceable. You have this trial has roped in, like, Duke, North Carolina, Clemson football.
Yeah, I mean, stunning.
It is clear that there's a culture of paying people and that NCAA rules are completely ineffectual at trying to prevent that from happening. So now what? What do you do now?
I mean, and think of it in another context. Let's say, I mean, anyone who pays attention to, say, the University of Michigan Musical School knows that it's one of the great institutions in the world, and this is probably the number one place in the world for musical theater students. And let's say there's a high school kid who's coming to Michigan as a musical theater student, and somebody on Broadway says, you know, I want to give you XYZ money because I think in 4 years I'm going to want to use you in a Broadway show. Any problem with that?
Yeah, no.
Anyone get worked up about that?
No, I mean,
I didn't start at this spot, Brian. I thought you were wrong.
What?
I think you were wrong about defensive tackle this year, too, as long as we get back to that. But I do think that in the big picture, you've seen it more clearly than just about anyone else about the big picture, and it doesn't make sense. The current system doesn't make sense. And if you are, as a young 18-year-old, talented enough to sell your image or to have others out there pay you for whatever, let it be.
Yeah, and I think it's especially relevant for football because a football player, even if you do get to the NFL, like, what are the chances that you have a productive career? You know, with all the injuries and everything, it's a crapshoot. So, you know, a guy like Denard, maybe even a guy like Caron Higdon, like, their most productive football years came in college, and then they didn't get compensated as they should have been. Obviously, they're getting something out of it, but not, like, enough money to, like, set them up. And, you know, a starting running back at the University of Michigan shouldn't find themselves in a situation where it's like, my family's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And, I worry about Caron specifically because, you know, he's got a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I wish that Caron Higdon was in a better financial position than he is. The only thing preventing that from happening is the NCAA.
Yeah, and the future of Caron Higdon in the NFL is, you know, it's not obvious he's going to ever get a payday there.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, if you look at what the NCAA does for athletes, essentially nothing. I mean, Jamal Crawford is the worst example of NCAA misbehavior. What the NCAA did to Jamal Crawford was criminal. Now, fortunately, Jamal Crawford became a multi-billionaire or millionaire, so we don't need to shed
10 years from now.
And we don't need to shed tears about him, except that Jamal Crawford wanted to be in school. Here was a kid who was a good student who did not want to go to the NBA, who wanted to stay in school, and they didn't let him.
I mean, that's
and that's, you know, not a singular event. Mitch McGarry.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that was a little bit different.
You know, it's a different story.
It is kind of similar in the fact that it is an incredibly outdated, archaic rule that the NCAA won't let go.
Yeah, he was unfortunate. It was unfortunate that he was caught by the NCAA as opposed to the school.
Weed.
For school.
Weed.
If he caught by the school, it would have been a suspension, but it wouldn't have been a lost year.
But those are just two local examples of how the NCAA doesn't really care at all.
A performance depressing drug.
Right. Right, exactly. And I mean, they don't care at all about students, and they don't, or kids. I mean, what they care about is getting, you know, their $10 million bonuses. $20 million bonuses.
No, I say 10.
And, so, you know, it's a depressing structure. And there's lots of people to blame. All the colleges.
And people get like on the FBI about like how they don't have anything better to do. And it's like this is valuable work that they are doing. Mm-hmm. Like even if like the convictions that they are getting are like sort of minor players in the game, like having this all in court, having this be a big news story, like I think it pushes us towards the day when we finally at least let other people pay. And, you know, if the NCAA isn't directly paying, whatever. But like the day where they're name and image rights come back and other people can just be like, hey, I want you to play for my school. Here's some money. And that's completely fine. Like, I think that day has been accelerated by this trial, and that's worth doing.
Gotcha. We need to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side and close things out. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. I mentioned earlier in the show, I have an update on Javon Cumberland, the Oakland University grad transfer on the basketball side later on today on the MichiganInsider.com. But I want to pick you guys' brain to see what you think of Franz Wagner. Michigan still very much in the mix for Franz. I already mentioned on the site that, you know, one of the big keys for Michigan in trying to swing this pendulum their way, because last check it was still up in the air, you know, as far as what he was going to do, stay in Germany versus coming to the States. You know, a big piece to that puzzle for Michigan is getting him on campus for an official. But let's assume that the Wolverines can land Franz.
Okay.
What do you think? I've given my thoughts on what Franz is. What do you think from watching film?
Well, so first of all, he's a shooter, and he's got a very quick release, a very repeatable release. I think he's going to be, you know, a 40% plus guy. I think he's a two guard. In Michigan.
I'm glad you said. And so let me interject there, because that's been one of my things is while he might not be considered a classic two, I think he could play some two for Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, he's 6'7", so you kind of think like, he's kind of a wing or a forward. But, you know, he's a guy, he can shoot, he can come off screens. You know, his ability to create for himself is still developing. It's also kind of hard to tell exactly, because, you know, he's playing EuroLeague ball most of his highlights, so he's not playing against, you know, 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds most of the time. He's playing against
older guys,
grown men. So maybe in a college context, he'd be more of an immediate shot creator. But, you know, I think, you know, a 6'7" version of Poole is kind of what he is.
Yeah, I watched him at the NBA camp last summer, and I was, again.
He was only 16 then.
He was only 16, and I was surprised how viable he was, how ready he was to compete with, you know, the best of the best stateside. I mean, chalked him up as a classic Euro. He's going to be soft. He isn't going to go into paint. He put it on the deck. He got in the lane. He made plays for others. That was maybe the most shocking thing. I expected him to be able to shoot it, but he made plays for others on his way to the rim.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not saying that he's, you know, that's a staple of his game, but he's capable.
But I think if he was playing in the United States with 17-year-olds, which I think right now, I think he'd be viewed as a top 50 player.
Brian Snow's been on your board, and he's like, you know, if we ranked him, he'd be a top 50 player. Mm-hmm. It's just that we don't rank guys who are in Europe who don't play on the circuit and haven't committed to college.
Right. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, whether he's a two or not, I'm not so sure. It's a, we've said this at least twice in the last 4 weeks, and I don't know where it comes from, but it's the best homily I've heard, and that's you are who you can guard.
Yeah.
And it is, and that's the one thing. I don't really know if he can guard quicker guys who might be playing the two.
Well, you know, highlight films never have any defense.
Right. I mean, that's the problem. So. And so I'm this next week, since we're going to keep doing the show, I guess I'll try and see if I can find
a deep dive.
I'll try and do a deep dive and see if I can find some full game film and see, you know, what he looks like in that respect. Cause I don't know. I do know at 6'7", he has a nice shot from distance. He can shoot the ball. And when you're 6'7", you have, you know, you tend to get open from distance.
Yeah.
And he can handle the ball reasonably well. He looks like a pretty good passer. He's like most Euros. He's willing to mix it up. Yeah. He's not going to shy away from the basket. So, you know, he's a wonderful possibility for Michigan.
Absolutely. Well, that'll do it for this edition of the MGoBlog Roundtable. It's going to stay around. You guys requested it. These guys are willing to oblige. So we appreciate that. So we'll be back next week with the MGoBlog Roundtable.
Who's got it better than